Welcome to Hearts of Caregiving, nurturing the souls of caregivers. This podcast focuses on supporting and empowering caregivers who selfishly dedicate their time and energy caring for others. Whether you're a professional caregiver or supporting a loved one, we offer a sanctuary for inspiration, self-care tips, and a reminder that you're not alone on your journey. Hosted by Velda Brennison, Janine Marbury Bryant, and Mary C. Hartfield. Tune in every Wednesday as we explore the profound impact of caregiving and discover the power of nurturing your own heart along the way.
Welcome to Hearts of Caregiving. I'm your co-host, Mary C. Hartfield. The other two hosts are out on respite. So today I have a special guest. This month we're talking to different caregivers. This month I have Loretta. She is a caregiver for her mother. And also, one thing about it is, I thought about later, when you get into caregiving, if someone in your family gets sick, sometimes your credit is affected. So also, she has a company called Cleansing Credit. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Welcome, Loretta. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you.
So today, what we really want to talk about, let's start out with talking about what started your caregiving journey. How long have you been on it?
So my caregiving journey began 4 years ago. My mom moved from Chicago, Illinois, due to frustration originally, and then my dad passed away, so I inherited her permanently after that. And going through this process, I've learned so much about patience and advice about how illnesses affect you and how their independence or feeling like they're not independent affects them, and how to be understanding to some degree anyway of what they're going through, as well as you're trying to keep yourself in a stable place yourself, in a good place, stable mind, and you're trying to still live your life, but it's a huge sacrifice. So if you're not in it for the right reason, I say allow someone else to do it.
Yeah. So you have other brothers, sisters, and she was in Chicago. So how did it get to, and I know you live in a different city down south. So how did it get to where you're the one that was going to take care of her? How was that?
Well, the strangest thing is that I've always knew at the age 11, I was going to care for my parents. Mm-hmm. God gave me that when I was young. Did I think about it? I did, but and for years, I used to try to get my parents to come live with me because I realized that they were aging and just weren't being properly cared for. But what happened is my mom's furnace went out in her house, and she called me and said, I need you to come and get me. Like, I lived around the corner. That was a 10-hour drive.
Right.
And I said, Mom, let me call you back. I need to talk this over with Raymond. And so I did. I hung up, and I don't even think it was 10 minutes. She was calling me right back. What are you going to do? I need to get out of here. So my husband said, okay, let's just go get her. So we go and get her. And when I got her here, what I didn't realize is the real condition she was in.
Oh, okay.
And so that just kind of took me by storm. I'm trying to work, trying to take care of her, making sure she have what she needs. And then when my dad passed, it really hit me. Like, I didn't really get a chance to grieve my dad's death because I was focused on trying to keep her alive.
Right.
After they had been married 58 years. And so I'm watching her day by day, how she's just, you know, she's beginning to tell me that, you know, if she's not here anymore, know that she loves me. You know, she was really trying to check out. So what happened? I decided, okay, I got to keep this lady living. God ain't ready for her to go. So I started, like, with everything in me, making sure she had all of her doctor's appointments, making sure She was back in line with her medication, changing her diet. And that within itself was a task because she's addicted to sugar. Mm-hmm. And so it's like dealing with an addict. I don't care what kind of addict. When you don't give them what they want to feed that addiction, they become mean. They say mean things. Yeah. And so you have to learn how to not take those things personally, mm-hmm. But still know the reason you're taking care of them. And I will tell anybody that's thinking about becoming a caregiver, if you are not willing to spend your own money, because the little money that they get doesn't amount to much, then you better not do it, because you will be spending your time and your money just like you would if you was taking care of your children.
Right. And my husband, it was 7 years I took care of him, and I am keeping him alive, basically making sure he's still motivated, that he's like, okay, there's mm-hmm. a reason to live. But I think it is totally different when you have another parent that dies. Yeah. And then you have the other parent that's still around. And 58 years is a lot of years to be with another person. And a lot, because I've seen and been to funerals that were back to back in a month different because the other spouse was like, okay, that person died. Why should I live any longer? Because they're gone. So that's a whole different thing, trying to keep them alive just because you know they have, they're thinking, okay, I might as well go home with that other person.
Yeah. And I know she was thinking that. I know my mom married my father at the age of 16.
Wow.
So there is no way she was not thinking like, there's nothing else for me to be here for.
Right.
So, you know, I try to act here. Still to this day, I come home, I'm exhausted, but I still try to give her time. I act silly. I try to get her to dance. I try to talk to her. We talk about all kinds of things. Some things I'd be shocked they come out of our mouth, but you know, it gives her a way to free herself in the conversation, right? And
yes.
So she's taken really close to my youngest daughter mm-hmm. and now to my husband. Now I'm the target because everything nasty is coming towards me, right? Because I'm the caregiver. I'm the one that's going to say no. When you have to take on that role, you just got to be mentally prepared. And so my siblings, my two older siblings are okay with it, but my two younger siblings are not okay with it. So they want her back in Chicago. They were not taking care of her in Chicago. So I don't understand. And I know they don't understand what this is like. They just think they know.
Yes. How do you, you know, you talked about, how do you mentally prepare to be a caregiver?
Well, I would say this. When you realize that that is about to be your task, mm-hmm. you got to make it up in your mind that you are willing to sacrifice yourself until it is no more.
Right.
You got to treat this as if though you just had a baby. You can't be planning vacations and stuff without them. You can't be without having some kind of caregiver to take care of them if they're not going with you. You can't plan. I go to work. So I could come home if it was just me and not cook. I can't do that anymore.
Right.
I always have to worry about her three meals a day. So I feel like I have another child to take care of. And so those are the things you have to plan in your head, and you're going to do that until you don't do it anymore.
Right. Right. So how, because it is, when my husband came, you know, he had just been laid off from his job. 6 months later, he has renal failure. So mm-hmm. 7 years later, you know, we're dealing with this every single day. Then before he died, like a year before, 6 months, he goes to a nursing home, you know, has a heart attack, you know, so you're dealing with all this different things that going on in their life. How did it affect your household?
It affects my household greatly, to be honest, because my mom was very mean and nasty. And so it was difficult on my husband. It was difficult on my daughter, because nobody wants to hear someone talking nasty about their parent, right?
Right.
And so when you're saying mean things about those people, that affects them. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to rebel, but you got to keep them focused, too, for what the real goal is, right? So right. I have to do a lot of praying. I have to do a lot of talking, because you have to chastise them, the abuser, like as if though they're a child. Mm-hmm. Hey, you can't do that in here. You can't talk like that in here. And you got to keep saying it. You can't just say it one time and think they're going to get it. And so, and then you got to have those outings with the other people in the house when the other person isn't around so that they can let off their steam. And you have to listen, you know, and try to be understanding. Some things you, because if you've never experienced it, you'll never understand it.
Yeah. And so, I think we talked about before on the podcast about people don't realize that person that is sick and being cared for, there's so much anger because they're mad. Why me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why I'm the one, you know, I've been healthy. Mm-hmm. Why did this disease come over me? Or why did these issues come over me? So you have to do that balance act of, mm-hmm. yes, you have to say, wait a minute. How are you speaking? How are you talking? But yet at the same time, you have to have the empathy for that person because of what mm-hmm. they're going through. But yet, as you said, the whole household, you know, they don't initially understand, but then they realize, oh, wait a minute, let me step back. But like you said, you have to have time to spend time with them for them yes. to understand what's going on.
Yes. My husband became very angry because she would, it's like it was a personal attack. And so a lot of times I would have to say to him, hey, I know you didn't get a chance to take care of your parents or be a caregiver to your parents, but this is what it's like.
Yes.
And the little time that you did go back and forth to the doctors with your dad, it doesn't even compare because, you know, it was just a house full of men, right?
Right.
And so I said, but I would have never complained. I never complained to take you all to the doctor. I never complained to go with you and make sure that he was getting what he needed. So, but I just think women are built different, period. We are naturally caregivers because we're nurturers to our children. And so men don't, they just don't have that. It's black or it's white. And so when he began to fuss and complain, sometimes I had to just get in his face. Hey, that's my mother. No matter how you're feeling, you're going to have to respect this.
Yes.
And so now it's just like now he's so catering to us a little thing.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him loving on his mm-hmm. Mother, loving on him, taking care of her, talking mm-hmm. to him. But like you said, it is a process.
It is.
That the whole household has to go through it.
Yeah. And you got somebody got to stand firm and flat footed because if they don't, the whole house will fall to pieces.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Someone has to be one say, wait a minute, you got to get the whole, you know, it's kind of like a bird looking down and getting a lay of the land. Mm-hmm. Someone has to be there during that to make sure everything continues to function. So how has it affected your relationship with your husband, you know, taking care of, having to take care of someone?
You know, at first, It was strange. It was an estrange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I think because he gets it, he's like, I know that you're going outside the house to work. And so what we need to do is work this as a team.
Okay.
So we're here and now we're going to do this while you go out the house and do it. Now, some evenings they want me to just sit up downstairs and talk with them. And I try to do that, but I'm up so early in the morning. I'm up at 5 a.m. I don't get home to 5:30, 6 o'clock. I can't do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ask them to be understanding. Now on the weekend, I'll stay down there all day long with them. But during the week, it's kind of a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it, my husband was home most of the day by himself because I also worked. So mm-hmm. when I came in the house, you know, 5:30, I'm ready to go up, get some me time. Yeah. But I sat there until 9 o'clock. I would watch the clock sometime. You know, I engage with him, watch what he wants to watch. And then 9 o'clock, I'm like, oh, I better head to bed because I got to get up in the morning. And when I went to bed, I was really just kind of bringing myself down, you know, relaxing, bathtub, shower, but just kind of bringing myself down because you also need that time.
Yes.
A lot of people don't understand that. They expect you to be in gear all the time.
Well, you know, what I do is I have a 30-minute ride home. I drive extra slow.
Okay.
So that I can have my quiet time by myself on my way home. So when I walk through the door, I have released some of the things I've gone through at work. I don't talk about work when I get home because I don't want them to think that I don't know how to separate my work life from my home life.
Yes.
And so I don't go to work and talk about my home life, and I don't come home and talk about my work life. So I have balanced that amount out of it, but you still need to come down. You personally need to let your mind come down off of your day.
Right. So that's one way of self-care. You know, everyone on your way home from work, if you work, about how to just focus, maybe some nice music in a car, just and then separate the two. What else do you do for self-care?
So I'm a big proponent of giving myself a facial. I pamper myself at night. And I like to watch a spiritual movie before I go to bed. That way my mind is set on God and I have a good night rest.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We talk because here at Hearts of Caregiving, we always talk about self-care, because I think as a caregiver, yes, they need your time, but you also need your time where you're taking care of yourself, because you can't take care of others if you're down also.
Isn't that the truth? And you can't feel guilty about it either.
Yeah, you can't feel guilty about it. I know I went away every 2 months. My son was my supporter. They knew Eric was taken care of. So I went and flew off somewhere to make sure I was taking care of myself. So one thing I want to talk about also here is that you have the company, as I mentioned before, Cleansing Credit. Tell us a little bit about that, because people, when you have someone that, as my husband, you know, he prided himself on his credit. I pride myself on the credit. But then when medical expenses happen and adjustment, and then also disability don't kick in on time all the way.
No, it doesn't.
You know, he so happened had a disease where they automatically give it to you, but yet it doesn't kick in at time. So sometime it hits your credit and affect it.
Yes,
so tell us about your company and tell us about what you do when it comes to credit.
So Cleansing Credit came about because from my own experience, I went through a very tough time in my life, and I really didn't know what to do, but I knew that I wanted to be able to help people once I started to learn. So I started reading up on and watching a lot of videos on how to clean up people's credits, because I kept saying, why is all these companies calling you about cleaning up your credit? What are they charging you all this money for?
Right.
So I began to go step by step with my own credit. And I was at a 468. I took my 468 to a 720. And then from a 720 to a 801. Mm. So what I did was I started to read. I went online. I found these letters, these credit letters. And I started to send the credit letters to the creditors. And I started to keep intact with the law of credit. Because a lot of times, people don't realize they have rights to their credit report. Just like the creditors have a right to report your credit bad, you have a right to challenge what they report. Mm-hmm. And so if they misspell your name, they have to remove it off your credit report. But what really got me going was I started to see that predominantly we as African-Americans who don't take credit as serious, I wanted to help our people learn and become more educated about how to get in the arena of being able to walk into a dealership with no deposit, or being able to get a credit card that wasn't at a 26.5% interest rate, or recovering from hardship.
Yes.
Their medical bills is not so heavy on your credit like people think. Mm-hmm. Late payments will kill you faster than a medical bill. So I will tell anybody, if you got some medical expense, if you send them $5 a month, they cannot report you to a credit bureau.
That's good.
And so therefore, that will keep your credit in good standings. But you know, credit bureaus are in business for profit.
Right.
It's a profitable company. And so they're trying to their way of making money is by partner with these different companies that report to them. So they get a profit out of this. So you got to keep that in mind. So if you ever had your credit, nothing has changed, but your credit score has dropped. That's the credit bureau just dropping your credit merely because they can't. But you can challenge that too. And so what you do is you go to them and you say, hey, what reason did y'all drop my credit score? Because nothing has changed and I want it in writing. Well, when you tell them that, they're going to put it back where it was.
Okay. Yeah, I heard a man complain about that. He was up, did nothing different. And the next thing you know, I think maybe closed a credit card that had zero balance. And next thing you know, they're dropping his credit. He's like, why are you dropping my credit?
Well, because you should never close an account. If the company closes it, it's one thing. Don't you close it.
Okay.
Because what happens is when you close an account, they will drop your credit score anywhere from 10 to 50 points.
Okay.
So, wow, because it's considered old history, right? Mm-hmm. And they can still go back and see how well you paid that creditor. That's why you shouldn't close it.
Okay.
So even though you don't have anything on it, it doesn't matter. It's got history there that most creditors are looking for. Who trusted you 10 years ago? Who trusted you 15 years ago? And they can look at your pay history. So even though you're thinking, well, I ain't even using this card. Why am I keeping it open? You're keeping it open because you want them to see the history.
Right. The history. Yeah, that's good. So how do people get in touch with you if they're interested? Because you help people, you know, with their credit. How do they get a hold of you?
So if they want to reach me, they can reach me at loretta.taylor45@gmail.com.
Okay. Loretta.taylor45
at Gmail.
Okay. And I make sure everyone that when we post online at Hearts of Caregiving on Facebook, I'll make sure I put that on there for you to know it. But also, so I want to kind of, before we leave, is last week we talked to Beverly. She's human resource. I know that you are human resource. We talked a little bit about FMLA. So some more little questions about that, because people are like, okay, we need to know some more about FMLA. So talk again about the definition. I know we talked about it last week, because actually Family Medical Leave Act, I used it when my husband was sick. My doctor signed off it. I brought it to my company and they basically told me that, okay, I don't want to know about anything until it's after 4 hours.
Well,
so I just came in and out and found out that usually it's 12 weeks to protect your job, but I guess it don't work like that.
Well, because what you probably had was considered to be intermittent FMLA.
Okay.
And intermittent FMLA is just hours that you use towards that 12 weeks, that 480 hours. So if you're not, it's like if you're not going out on a full-term leave, like a lady that's having a baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lady that's having, she's pregnant, she gets pregnant, and probably between 6 and 7 months, now she's going to go to her human resource department and say, hey, I'm pregnant, I want to file for FMLA, can I get the paperwork? So you give them the paperwork, and then the doctor fills it out and says about when she'll go out full-time, and when she should return if it's not a C-section.
Okay.
If it's a C-section, she's going to be out 8 weeks. If it's a vaginal delivery, she's going to be out 6 weeks, right? So if she's out 6 weeks, she still got 6 weeks left, right?
Yeah.
So what can happen is intermittently before she goes out for her doctor's appointments or whatever, she could use the intermittent part of it. But you have to be careful because if you overextend yourself in the intermittent hours, you will shortchange yourself on the full time when you go to deliver.
So
if you, go ahead.
So someone that, you know, find out husband came sick, you know, you have to bring him to appointments. Like I had to bring him to, you know, once a month, he had the dialysis appointment where they did the whole full checkup for, you know, hour and a half were there, and then some other appointment. When should someone that in that situation as a caregiver, when should they do FMLA?
When they first find out that their husband is ill.
Okay. Okay.
Don't wait, because you don't want to keep going in and out talking about I got appointments and your job become at risk.
Okay.
So the minute you find out that it is serious, you need to be applying.
Okay. Because, okay, you said applying. So does that mean the company does not have to give you FMLA?
They do, but there's criteria. So you have to have worked 1,250 hours. You have to have been with the employer a year.
Okay. And then, okay, talk a little bit more. I know Beverly last week talked about the 12-week, but, you know, I didn't get it because my company was just like, you know, he was sick for 7 years. They like, okay, if it's over 4 hours, let us know. You know, I work, you know, I was a director for the company, and they're really, I think, gave me a lot of grace and a lot of room with my FMLA. Mm-hmm. So talk about, again, really the 12 weeks. I mean,
the 12 weeks totals up to 480 hours.
Okay.
So you don't have to burn up 480 hours intermittently, or some people will.
Okay.
But that's all you'll get. The other thing is, you can apply for FMLA for yourself and your husband, but you get one bucket. That one 480 hours has to be split between the two of you all, if that was the case. So let's just say you had a health condition, your husband has a health condition, you get one 480 hours.
So he, at his company, wouldn't get 12. My company wouldn't get 12. It's just one together.
Well, he would get 480 from his company.
Okay.
For himself.
Yeah.
And you, or, you know, if both of y'all got it, and he would, but see, he can't cover you and you can't cover him.
Right. Okay. Got you.
Yeah.
Wow. It is a lot to learn about FMLA. What other ways, how do you interact with people that these sickness come on and they have to, how do you as a human resource person take care of that, some of those?
So when people, and I'm experiencing this presently as we speak, I have quite a few employees who are out for their own health condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so you track it. The supervisor is supposed to be the one tracking this. But my department tracks their hours that they're out. So that we'll know when they're getting close. And then we send them a letter and let them know you're getting close to your 480 hours. What are your plans of returning back to work?
Oh, okay.
And some people may have to go out, I mean, on long-term disability, because short-term and long-term coincide with FMLA.
Oh,
so the FMLA
okay.
covers the job. Short-term and long-term pays you while you're out.
Okay. Okay. So if you're going to, for yourself, if you're going to be out over that 480, you may have to go to long-term or short-term disability.
Yeah, but once you go to long-term, once you burn up that 480 hours, you no longer have job protection. So they could release you even though you're on long-term disability.
Oh, okay. So that protection is not there any longer.
Right. That protection is not there any longer.
Wow. That is a lot. So this may be something that we have to have you come back on the podcast and talk about little people and what FMLA and what you suggest people do. But as we close out, any final words about being a caregiver that you would like to tell?
I just say to people who are having to be forced into being a caregiver, or who decided they wanted to be a caregiver, seek God first, because okay. This is no easy task, and you can't be abusing these people. And so you got to know when you're on that thin line. And so if you're not in it for the love of the person, please don't do it.
So you're
let
saying,
someone
you're,
else take that job.
But you're basically saying people have a choice where I don't
they
think.
Do have, well, you can put them in a nursing home.
Yeah,
you don't have to. True. You don't have to bring them into your house.
Yeah, that's
if you're
true.
Not going to treat them with loving care, don't bring them into your home.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot out of your family.
Yes, that's so true. I think that's it. If you're not going to treat that person with love and care, you know, because I know a lot of cultures, like, it's not a question. I'm not putting my mom in a daycare.
Right.
Because my husband, he couldn't, got to a place when he had a heart attack on top of being sick and he couldn't walk. We didn't have a choice but to go to
right.
rehab. you know. And then when he was, when he passed away, we were about to bring him home. I had talked to all these sources. They're going to have people come in and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes you have to realize you as a caregiver, you have to put them there because you no longer take care of them at home.
That's right. You got to know when, you got to know when enough is enough, and you got to know when your ability is still there or not still there.
Yes. Well, Loretta, thank you for coming on the show. This is a great, rich conversation. I want to let you know, again, if you need help with credit, cleansing credit, you can reach her at loretta.taylor45@gmail.com. Thank you again for coming. And remember, everyone, you can go to Hearts of Caregiving on Facebook and find every podcast that we drop. Also, you can go to heartsofcaregiving.org and you'll find a listing at our website of all our past podcasts. So thank you again. Remember, we drop every single Wednesday. Thank you and have a great day. And thank you again.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Hearts of Caregiving. You can find us on our Facebook page, Hearts of Caregiving. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. Until next time, take care.